This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. There's a community-based effort to transform the Cincinnati neighborhood of Avondale. We talk with some of the people behind that project coming up. First, multiple local communities have turned to our next guest for help with plans to make a public realm more inviting or to locate a city building or to develop bike-centric areas. Joe Nickel and Kevin Wright are the co-founders and principals at Yard & Company, and they are in the studio with us today. Welcome, Joe.
Thanks for having us.
And welcome, Kevin.
Thanks a lot.
Join the conversation at 513-419-7100. You can also email talk at wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. We'll look for your comments and your tweets and try to get some in the show. So we've had you both, I believe, on the show before when you launched what we know as the Neighborhood Playbook.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Refresh our listeners' memories on what that project was.
Well, that was a 2016 People's Liberty funded project. At the time, I was working in Walnut Hills, and Joe and I started connecting over an idea that we had seen work around activating spaces in neighborhoods with intention around creating real estate or economic development outcomes. So taking the energy that neighborhoods put into events and programming, which exists in almost every neighborhood, and finding a way to focus that to achieve an outcome that maybe is in a neighborhood plan around getting a coffee shop to the neighborhood or a bar or a park. And we felt that that could be formalized into a book of some kind. We wrote a PDF called Five Ways to Activate Your Neighborhood this weekend and just posted it online to see if people would gravitate towards the idea, and it got downloaded quite a few times. So we applied for a People's Liberty Grant, wrote the Neighborhood Playbook. It's a two-sided book. There's an entry point for developers and there's an entry point for community members. And it's the same five plays for how to activate your neighborhood, written for the two different audiences, because oftentimes developers and communities speak different languages, as we know. And then it actually encourages the community to read it from the developer's point of view and the developer to read it from the community's point of view. That was launched in late 2016, and we've sold over 1,000 copies internationally. So it really took off and led eventually to the formation of Yard & Company.
Exactly. So the principles that you laid out in that book, you decided to take a leap and create your own business. You call it Yard & Company. What is it exactly that you do?
So Yard & Company, as Kevin mentioned, was founded on the ideas and principles in the Neighborhood Playbook. And that led to us describing ourselves as an urban growth firm. And we always get the question, what is an urban growth firm? Because it doesn't really exist as a thing. And it really doesn't. We're one of the few people in the firms in the country that really focus on problem solving around growth. And that can mean a lot of different things based on the context. But really, through urban development and design, economic development, and a process that we call demand discovery, where we really take this playbook approach to identifying a problem, finding a low-cost, cheap, immediate way to fix it with each other, and then letting that inform bigger, bolder investments. So we kind of wrap that up into our mission as a Yard & Company. And now we're working in, I think, about 8 different states across the country and a number of different communities, private developers, communities, corporations, and community development groups, and really just kind of scaling that idea further.
It looks like you guys are getting lots of projects across the country, including several here in our area. You've got some in Covington, Westwood, Loveland, a lot of areas around here. We're going to dive into some of those. But first, where does this name come from? Where did you guys come up with Yard & Company? What's the explainer there?
Well, it's not a long enough segment.
It was about 10,000 text messages late night. We go back and forth to name the company. We wanted it to reflect our creative way of approaching planning and development. So we didn't want a standard acronym or a standard planning firm name, which we definitely landed on. We kept coming back to the idea of the yard being a place that people could create together and they could come together and interact with one another. And from our experiences in our past work, when you just bring people together in a space that's overlooked, and they come together and share ideas or share a beer or share a meal, really powerful things can happen and a place can really start to grow. And so we were just really inspired by several things we'd seen across the country and projects we'd been involved in, and the way we would describe those is they felt like a yard. That's where we landed on the name.
One of the areas of specialty for you, I guess, is something called tactical urbanism. Mm-hmm. What is that?
So tactical urbanism grew out of this realization that a lot of the cities that are growing don't always have the resources to impact positive change, particularly in the public realm. So our streets, our parks, our urban spaces. And it became a methodology to use kind of found or cheap materials and just creativity and resourcefulness to quickly test ideas in public spaces for how they might be used better, with the kind of underlying goal to bring people out into the public realm in a safe, fun, enjoyable way. So the kind of motto of tactical urbanism is short-term change for long-term action. And it kind of reinforces a lot of the ideas that came out of the neighborhood playbook for us as a methodology, particularly in the streets and public spaces, to build out these public spaces, a very inclusive way of doing it with neighbors and technical folks, bringing them together. So often they operate in silos and create really positive change that we can all see happen within our lifetimes. And then use that as a way to spark interest and get smarter about what long-term investments in streets and public spaces look like.
Do we have some examples locally of successful tactical urbanism?
Well, I painted a crosswalk in front of my house.
So you're talking about Bellevue, right?
There's
a crosswalk near mm-hmm. Grandview Elementary School, and this doesn't look like a normal crosswalk anymore. Tell us about it.
Right. Well, that's right. So in front of my house, we have a block party on our block every fall, and I sit on my front porch. My son goes to the elementary school across the street, and often sit on my front porch and see people kind of run the stop sign or roll through it or go fast. So we reached out to the city and got permission to brighten up the crosswalk. We spent about $300 on paint rollers from Home Depot or Lowe's. Had four people. We taped off stripes on the crosswalks and painted them. The street was closed all day. And then we actually had a bonfire in the middle of the intersection that kind of kicked off the block party. I guess to take this to a sort of a bigger scale and talk about it in terms of how we approach this sort of work at Yard and how cities approach it, we've been told in some conversations that crosswalks can cost up to $30,000 to install. So we wanted to prove that we could make an intersection safer without a ton of heavy infrastructure like flashing lights and official sort of crosswalk infrastructure, that we could actually, with just four neighbors and a budget of $300, make our intersection safer. And it worked.
In a design time of 2 weeks, not 2 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, this moved really quickly, and I was at the most recent Bellevue City Council meeting, because I like to get wild during the week, so I go to all the Bellevue City Council meetings.
Crazy.
It sounds like there's plans for possibly putting some more of these in that same area.
Yeah, in Bellevue, it's inspired, and this is, frankly, one of the reasons we love it, and we've seen this elsewhere. In Bellevue, it inspired people to say, hey, I want it over here, and it's actually, I think in part that plus some other things that have happened in Bellevue. We tested the playbook originally with the old Kentucky Makers Market on Fairfield Avenue, and it started to become placemaking or tactical urbanism has started to become sort of part of the DNA of Bellevue. You have the Allery that was done by Ryan Salzman and his family.
This is an alley with a bunch of colorful polka dots that is used as an occasional art gallery,
right.
A gathering space.
And there's some folks who do a block party in an alley called Blocktoberfest. Every year. Now, we wouldn't take credit for inspiring all that, but it's just sort of part of that community's DNA. And a lot of those people have run for council and become elected officials in the community as part of their involvement. When we do this type of work as part of our engagement work in different communities around the country, that is kind of how we measure success. If people after this, when they've built something, they feel ownership of it, they feel like they accomplished something, they didn't just get asked their opinion in a meeting. They oftentimes end up becoming community leaders, which is an amazing outcome.
What was special about this crosswalk, though, was it's colorful. Like there are shades of blue in it. Mm-hmm. This doesn't look like your typical white striped or faded crosswalk.
Right.
Tell us a little bit about that design process.
Well, I think it started with a text from my mom, as all good design processes
sure.
start. Which had a huge spectrum of color from a crosswalk she saw in Europe or somewhere. And we took a piece of that spectrum and just kind of expanded it out into three shades of blue. It's still, I think, by design, most design standards, a pretty conservative design within the thresholds of what traffic safety, you know, there's colors that mean things on streets. And so we wanted to stay away from commonly associated colors with traffic control. So we just, three shades of blue, pretty simple to execute on, looks pretty refined and something that four volunteers could put in pretty easily. That's pretty much the extent of it. Mm-hmm.
You also work in something called demand discovery.
Right.
Okay, I want to read something from your website so that we can get a better idea of what this is. We believe that everyone from neighborhood citizens to the largest institutional developers can and should approach growth and problem solving through the lens of demand discovery, a process through which the low-risk testing of ideas can lead to smart, small wins that add lasting value for places. Help us understand what that means.
Well, if you think about the kind of normal diagram of community planning and community change, on one side, we all camp out in the church basement and talk about what future looks like 30 years from now. And then what we call the plan operators go away and start thinking about how to raise $30 million to make it happen. And it may or may not happen, or if it does happen, it becomes some kind of compromise of itself 5 years from now or 10 years from now, if we're lucky. Well, those same people or maybe different people show up at that end result and they don't recognize it. They're kind of angry in many cases because what's happened is nothing's really changed and this new thing has just arrived 5 years later and nobody even remembers being in the church basement. So what we've introduced or reintroduced are two kind of key steps that fill the gap between the planning and the development on the other end of the spectrum. And one is demand discovery. We are firm believers that even before the plan is done, that we can start working together as a community to start testing some of these ideas so that after the plan is kind of – the ink is dry on it, we're already seeing change happen. We're already changing attitudes, the story, the market around very cheap specific interventions in, say, a downtown or in a neighborhood. Those then lead – to small, more permanent installations. You might get that coffee shop that you wanted or the pizza joint or the amenities we all talk about when we get around and talk about what we want the future of our places to be. Those two things, which can happen in 18 months, not 18 years, then start to really make bigger development and sustained development not only more possible, but smarter and more reflective of the people that wanted to see it happen in the first place. Because now there's many more data points to kind of make a decision on how to design a bigger development based on.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We're talking today with Kevin Wright and Joe Nickel, the co-founders and partners, principals of Yard & Company, a Cincinnati-based urban growth firm. You guys have gotten a lot of work since launching your project. You're working all across the country, as you mentioned at the top of the interview, but you've got some local projects mm-hmm. as well. You're helping the city of Covington on its efforts to locate a new city hall. So for people who may not know, since 2013 or so, the city of Covington has been operating out of a rental space, the old JCPenney store on Pike Street, where it previously operated in the early 1980s before moving to a different department store on Madison. But that department store is now Hotel Covington. So the city had to move when they mm-hmm. sold that building to those developers. So what goes into helping a city like Covington find a more permanent home?
Well, this is a very interesting project. It's been a lot of fun so far and very creative. The purpose of the project in Covington is not to pick a site or to design a building. It is to work with members of a committee that had been formed and the mayor to sort of philosophically think through what the future of Covington City Hall could be and think through what the future of the Civic Commons might be or what public space might be. And so we're in the process right now of discovering how people interact with City Hall. A lot of it is and can be done via the internet. A lot of it is done at Braxton Brewery, when you bump into a fellow council member or a council member who's a neighbor. Some of it is done on the street when you're shoveling snow. And so we're in the discovery phase of that project now, really trying to figure out how citizens interact with employees of the city of Covington, how citizens interact with elected officials, and how citizens interact with other citizens. Taking that and putting together a document that will inform how to approach site selection and design down the road. So you'll see us over the next couple months doing some pretty creative community engagement projects to really get a sense of how people interact with the city and how they what they like or don't like about that, and see us probably testing some ideas that come out of that before installing kind of the permanent deliverable with the city.
And that'll ultimately shape when budget is allocated sometime in the future,
right.
What the city hall project could look like.
And you're also working with Loveland on a development plan there. Tell us about that project.
Yeah, so we were engaged as part of a larger comprehensive plan process to work with downtown Loveland, which for listeners that have not been there, it is worth checking out. It is this amazing village community along one of the nation's best bike trails and along a historic riverfront as well. And because of that kind of natural amenity that they have in their downtown, they're seeing a lot of interest in development coming to downtown. And they're a sophisticated group, and they know that if we're not out in front of it, that development's going to happen to us and not with us. And so they engaged us to walk them through not only an engagement process, but help them articulate the kind of creative terms that development is going to be built under. So that it creates a, you know, in 10 years when a lot of growth has happened, everybody's happy with what took place.
And last year you worked with the Cincinnati neighborhood of Westwood with its strategic planning initiative. What were the goals with that?
So that was an interesting project, and we can touch on an example within that of this demand discovery process. But the main goal there was Westwood, as many people know, like several Cincinnati neighborhoods, is starting to grow pretty rapidly. They have a $10 million park under construction. Westside Brewery has opened. It's a great community. It's the biggest community in Cincinnati. Tons of disposable income there that could stay in the neighborhood. And so as changes started to occur, they wanted to look at really the next 36 months and what they should be focusing on with the town within the town hall district to make sure that growth happens smartly and with the community. So over about 6 months, we worked with them to develop that strategy. One thing that came out of that was that we kept hearing from people in Westwood that many people would stay in Westwood to work if they could. And so they wanted a co-working space in their neighborhood. A traditional planning process probably would have said, okay, we heard that from you. Now let's say, hey, go build $1 million co-working space or put it in the final plan. We partnered with Westside Brewery, actually after one of the meetings where people said they wanted co-working, went and had a beer down there. We kind of looked around and we said, this basically is built like a co-working space, but it's empty during the day. Tables, chairs, Wi-Fi, TV, really just needs coffee. So we prototyped a co-working space for a week in partnership with Westside Brewery. And as people came and went, we asked them, would you use this permanently? What's missing? And that informed the final plan and really uncovered the demand for co-working in the district. And now that co-working has remained permanent as part of the community. So
you're also working on a project called Connect NKY that takes us back to the South Bank in northern Kentucky. This is related to improving bike and pedestrian opportunities. Mm-hmm. How do you rate the northern Kentucky side when it compares to Cincinnati in terms of bicycling and walkability?
It's flatter.
Yeah, it is flatter on the Kentucky
side. At least
side.
Near the river.
That's right.
I would say both sides of the river are equally challenged when it comes to bike infrastructure. And when you kind of compare it to the rest of the country, we are not there yet. And I think that's gaining recognition. On the south side of the river, there's a great biking community. Bicycling community that pulls from both sides of the river and get together and do rides all over the place. And so there's a great demand for it, but there's very little infrastructure for it. And so that kind of led to Connect, which was figuring out a way to work with Northern Kentucky communities and community leaders to test ideas about how do we reapportion pavement to be addressing that demand and use it as a test case to then inform more permanent bike infrastructure that could be built.
Well, so, and to piggyback on that real quick, what Wade at Tri-State Trails would tell you is that the most biked trail in the region is the Purple People Bridge. Right. So we know for a fact that people bike to and from Northern Kentucky and downtown, either go to work or home or whatever. We do it every day. And so to improve bike infrastructure in the urban core of both sides of the river is incredibly important for those folks who use that path to get to and from each side of the river each day.
And we had Jack Moreland from the bridge company on last week to talk about some of the issues that bridge is facing. And in our final minute here, I want to make sure that I ask you about really what is one of my favorite topics, and it is that relationship between Cincinnati and Northern Kentucky. And Kevin, before we went on the air, you said something, and maybe you stole this comment from Joe in the office. But you said that the region should treat, or you said something along the lines of the region should treat the Ohio River as its main street. What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, as from someone who's not from here originally, I think I have I'm able to look at it. Well, we both are able to look at it objectively. And we've been involved on both sides of rivers in numerous ways. If you were to look at the area objectively without looking at political boundaries, which I know is reality, that the river really should be thought of as the main street. It cuts through the region. And when you start, if you just sort of philosophically start thinking of the river as the main street, you start making different decisions about storytelling, branding, economic development outcomes, real estate development outcomes, bikeability, walkability. And I do think that that would be a good lens for us all to continue to look through and just to make sure that we have a collaborative future.
Kevin Wright and Joe Nickel are from the urban growth firm, Yard & Company, based here in Cincinnati. Thanks to both of you for coming in and talking to us today.
Thanks for having us.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstrow. I'm Michael Monks. Subscribe to our podcast at WVXU.org.